Hey, you. Thanks for tapping in on Tap Keg Podcast, where we explore different perspectives of sobriety and mental health so that you can take something and implement it into your own life. Here, we believe there's only one right way to sobriety. That's the way that works for you. I'm your host, RJ Zimmerman, and I'm excited to be joined today by Charlie Lavoie. Charlie is a person in long-term recovery, host of the Way Out podcast, and a certified peer recovery specialist. How are you doing today, Charlie?
I'm doing tremendous, RJ. Thanks for having me. It's an honor.
It's really exciting to have you here and just have a talk about all things that, you know, life, getting to that thriving point, really enjoying what you're doing and finding that fulfillment in your life that I think a lot of people, you know, including myself, we're looking for so long. So for those who don't know, could you give us a quick background into who you are?
Sure. As you mentioned, RJ, I'm a person in long-term recovery. What that means to me is I haven't found it necessary to use alcohol or other mood-altering substances since December 6, 2014. And it took a long time to get to that point, for sure, for me. I always say that I really believe that I had big addict and alcoholic switches baked into me from as long as I can remember. My dad always used to say, Charlie, you had the quickest hand to the cookie jar as a child. And I recently at lunch told him that I tell this as a part of my story. And he's like, no, Charlie, it's true. You did. It's not a lie. He said, we would hide the cookie jar up on top of the refrigerator. And here's two-year-old Charlie scaling the refrigerator to get the cookie jar. So certainly I was motivated early and often to consume things that changed my feelings. And when I first tried alcohol at the age of 16, it was a magical experience indeed for me. My mom died when I was 11 years old, so I do really believe that that provided a lot of fuel for an already burning campfire of addiction. When I tried alcohol for the very first time, it unlocked things in me that prior to that moment, I was not able to unlock. I could flirt with the girls. I could stick up to the guys. I could be the life of the party. It enabled me to be the person I wanted to be. And it eliminated all of the bad things that I felt up until that moment, that anxiety, that fear, that insecurity, that sneaking suspicion that I didn't quite belong. All of that was gone. And all I wanted to do was do that as much as I possibly could after that experience. And that's on the heels of that experience ending up with me being stuck at a dog kennel because I was so rowdy at that party that they didn't know what to do with me. And they checked on me hours later and my lips were blue and I wasn't breathing and I was literally dying of alcohol poisoning, but I was in a blackout, so I don't remember it. But my best friend was able to revive me by pounding on my chest. So even given that experience, I was just left with this indelible mark of freedom that drinking gave me. And all I wanted to do was do it as much as possible.
Yeah. And that resonates really with me too. And the fact that first time that you drank and getting to that point of being who you always wanted to be, what it's something that, you know, that can stick with us for such a long time. And how have you been able to find that post drinking, post, you know, in your recovery?
Yeah, that's a good question. Look, what alcohol gave me, at least temporarily, was ultimately an illusion, right? Mm-hmm. And the more I chased that elusive, increasingly so, feeling of freedom, of anxiety, of depression, of sadness, of fear, of insecurity, the less free I became. And, you know, it really ultimately culminated in, you know, really losing so many things that were important to me. Really important relationships with myself, with other people, and coming into recovery and surrendering ultimately to the fact that I had a problem with alcohol in substances, and that my life was completely unmanageable. I began a process, really ultimately, of reconnecting to the things that got me well and keep me well. And what I mean by that is, you know, I'm a practitioner of the 12 steps, although I've integrated a lot of other modalities into my recovery as well. And RJ, I love how you introduce the podcast in saying that the only right way is the way that works for you. And we're true believers of that as well on the Way Out podcast. We celebrate and elevate all pathways to recovery. The 12 steps were and continue to be central to my recovery in that they allowed me to reconnect to the three relationships that mattered most for me and that were really, really hampered or all but destroyed prior to getting sober. My relationship with a higher power, my relationship to myself, and then ultimately my relationship with other people. All of those relationships really screwed up. And I was disconnected. And being so disconnected from myself, so disconnected from a higher power, and so disconnected from other people got me sick and kept me sick. So it's been a process of really reconnecting to myself, to a higher power, and to other people. And that got me well and keeps me well.
And in that reconnecting, what has been the tools that have allowed you to really tap into that and find that connection?
I think about what I've done so far as running an experiment. And when I take spiritual actions, there's a spiritual result, regardless of whether I even believe in those actions. So let me give you an example. I didn't know this, but I hated God. Up until getting sober and starting to work the 12 steps in order with a sponsor, I would have told you I was agnostic. I discovered that I had a resentment against God. God took my mom away when I was 11 years old. I was pissed. I started praying to a God that I didn't understand, that I had no concept of, because for me, if I could think a God up, it wasn't big enough for me. Okay? So in the 12 steps, one of the biggest things we do is we develop a relationship with a higher power. Some folks find it helpful and it works for them to create a concept of a higher power and then start engaging with that higher power. That's great. That works for a lot of people. That wasn't going to work for me. Again, if I could think it up, it wasn't going to be big enough for me. So I just started praying to a God that I didn't understand, that I had no concept of, but I meant it. And I realized within a couple of months that as a result, my boss didn't change, my kids didn't change, the world didn't change through me praying to this power that I had no concept of, that I didn't understand. But I felt very different. And the way I was relating to the world was radically different. And my experience in my own body was radically different. And the realization was praying to a God that I don't understand, that I have no concept, doesn't change the world. It changes me. And that's what I needed. I needed to change. The world didn't need to change. My boss didn't need to change. My kids didn't need to change in order for me to feel better. I needed to change in order to feel better. So that's a big tool that I still continue to use. I lean into a higher power on a daily basis so that I can continue to evolve and change into the person that I feel called to be on a daily basis.
And that's, man, like running the experiment, that's so, it's so powerful. And when you can have that understanding that try this thing, see if it works. Okay, what about it actually works? Like breaking down, what was it in here? And then you can continue to implement it, find what it was and make it maybe enhance it, right?
You bet.
Or take something out of that this little bit did, but this other piece really didn't. And just being able to utilize that in a way to shift your perspective and allow you to see life through that different lens, that now it's not that I need to make these big changes. I just kind of need to allow myself to be in that different lens that you can view the world through and what's possible at that point. Like, that's incredible.
It's about experience for me through action rather than trying to have some sort of conceptual understanding of these abstract ideas, which can be really difficult for us.
Yeah.
And it can seem so out of reach and so impractical. But when I take these spiritual actions and then I begin to have an experience, then I can develop some trust and faith that continuing to do this is going to continue to produce a profound effect. I think about exercise the same way. You talk about tools that really got me well. I tell people all the time, if you're getting sober, if you're getting into recovery, if you're making a big change like that, daily exercise is huge. And it can be anything. It can be pickleball, it could be basketball, it could be walking, hiking, swimming, something that you enjoy that you can do on the regular makes a huge difference in how we feel in our bodies and our minds, and has a profound effect on how our well-being is. And it fills some of that time vacuum. If you're anything like me, boredom isn't a good thing.
Yep.
Right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
So that's another tool of the old tool belt, is daily activity that you enjoy.
And what you're talking about too, like that you enjoy. That's the important part, right? Not just doing things just to do them, but figure out what you enjoy. Like, why do you have to fill that space just to fill it? Do you actually enjoy it? And be honest with yourself about it too. And that can go a long way. And yeah, sometimes you can do something, you're not a big fan of it at first, but you like how you feel afterwards. If that's what you enjoy, you'll come to start to enjoy the process of getting there too, and leaning into that side of things.
No question. Like, I've learned that I have a high tolerance for suffering, RJ. I think a lot of it, but it's not infinite.
Yeah.
You know, and we can only do something we kind of hate for a finite period of time before we're like, you just can't, right? It's not sustainable.
Yep. Absolutely. It absolutely is not. And I wonder in some people's lives, if they look at, do we like creating moments of joy and creating like these moments of enjoyment, if that takes away from it, if it doesn't happen spontaneously, and, you know, just trying to get people out of that mindset of things don't have to be spontaneous to have meaning. You can create it yourself and it still has the same meaning if you want it to.
You get it. Yes, we can be intentional about it.
Yes.
And it can have as much or more value.
Yeah. Yeah. Just think of what message you're sending to yourself. If you're doing that thing that you enjoy and it's kind of difficult to get to, but you've had a crappy day, and you're still going to do that thing that you enjoy, what are you really telling yourself in that? Right?
Totally. Yeah, totally. Exactly. How is that reflecting how we feel about ourselves, how we value ourselves? It goes back to our relationship with ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely does. And what has been one of your favorite outcomes of developing that better relationship with yourself?
Oh, man. I mean,
I'm asking you to name your favorite child. I know.
But. Yeah, totally. Totally, RJ. But I would say the biggest benefit from an increasingly positive relationship with myself is having some self-compassion and self-forgiveness, not only around my past, but also in the present moment. And I don't know how many times in the past, way, way more than I could ever, ever count, this would come, you idiot, Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
You freaking idiot. Over something silly or something big or something in between. But that self-criticism and that self-recrimination of beating myself up over either doing or not doing something I think I should have done. And therapy was a big part of my journey too, RJ. And I learned that through the 12 steps, but also through therapy, that I could be there for myself. And I can have that self-compassion. And I frame it like, how would I treat my child if they were going through this experience?
Yes.
And I can treat myself that way too. I would never swear and curse and belittle my child for making a mistake. But I do that to myself. Less and less so these days, much less. And I can stop, pause, and give myself some grace and some self-compassion around the fact that I'm not perfect. I'm going to make mistakes.
In a way that I like to frame that, especially to men who are in a stubborn mode and they don't want to think about how changing their self-talk could be positive because their self-talk got them to where they are, whether it's successful or not, right? But is if you heard your child or a child that you cared very much about talking to themselves the way that you talk to yourself, what would be your reaction?
It's a great way to phrase that. And RJ, I have heard that with my youngest son recriminate himself like I've recriminate myself. And it's painful to watch because I know where he learned it from. Right. But
yeah,
I could also not, again, beat myself up over that. What I know without a shadow of a doubt is that I'm best served by being the best example of recovery I can be today. Be present today. And I've had opportunities now with my youngest son to walk through what we just walked through and say, would you tell somebody that you love very, very much that? Would you treat them that way? And so we get to have those kinds of conversations today. You know, I can't change the past. I can't change what's happened before this moment, but I can absolutely share my experience and the things that I've learned as a part of my recovery with my son today. And we can, and he can then hopefully learn and grow as well.
And that's where the recovery journey becomes something that's so special because you're taking these lessons that learn, you learn from a very painful point of your life and you're able to actually apply them across your life and not just when it comes to, whether it's a substance that you used or whether it's, pornography or gambling or, whatever that comfort that you were seeking that became unhealthy for your life, now you can take those lessons that got you out of that and you can apply it across life and lessons that you could teach others, and just how fulfilling that is. And so, you know, being able to share that experience with him, I could see it in your face right now, but how does it feel to know that you're showing up that way as a parent?
It's gratitude, deep, profound gratitude. And I love that you used the phrase show up, because that's how I view it as well. How am I showing up today? And when I went through my 12-step journey, when we do the self-examination portion in step 4 and 5, it was a lot about, for me, about how I did and did not show up in the relationships in my life and in my past. And so I have profound gratitude for the ability to increasingly show up in a positive way for the people that matter the most. I was really good at telling people, I love you. I would say it a lot, right? But it was like, I love you, now go away, right? Mm. So I can drink or do whatever I want to do, right? I love you, now go away, right?
Yeah.
But now, today, I can say it and I can follow that up with actions like being present in the moment. And if somebody wants to share something with me at an inopportune time, I'm doing this or I'm doing that, I can recognize that they're coming to me with a need. And I can set whatever I'm doing aside for the moment and honor that need in them and be present for them. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is. Yes. And it's when you start to frame your life around those moments and being present, not just for the relationships and the people in your life, but for yourself, like that's where things really start to change. And it feels like magic. That's where the unicorns start to come out and the rainbow.
Magic was in my head when you were, I was like, that's where the magic is. That's where the magic is.
Yeah. As human beings, we tend to try to overcomplicate things, but it turns out that oftentimes it's true. Simple is the answer. And the challenge with that is simple does not mean easy. And sometimes we think it should be. And that's the distinction that people need to make.
No question. No question. Much of what I practice is conceptually simple and very difficult in practice.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's in those challenges, like doing, because life has those hard moments. Well, things can't be simple, because if they're simple, they would be easy. And so you complicate right. them because it's hard. Well, complex things are difficult. And it's like, but if you have that the simple things that you do, like you've been talking about so far, and you do it in a, you know, in, you could say self-discipline, but really, you know, you consistent manner, you, whatever, however you want to frame it, but you just continue to show up like we've been talking about. That's where that magic really, really happens.
Absolutely. And I think about them as practices, because I wasn't good at them.
Yeah.
Prior to getting into recovery. And so they're practices.
You mean you get to get better at things?
You do. You do. And so I practice humility. I practice gratitude. I practice prayer and meditation. I practice being present and understand that it won't be perfect and that I'm going to fail. And that's okay. That I'm continuing to practice these things. And when I do that, it yields tremendous rewards.
I just, the fact that, you know, using those words practice and then using them with words that a lot of people associate with, well, I should kind of know how to do that. So I should have skill with it. And understanding that, well, you know, it is a skill. Skills can develop. Skills can, you know, turn into something that is actually something you're good at.
No question. And when we say should, I think about that as shooting all over ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're just shooting all over ourselves. No. These are practices. We're generally not very good at them. And that's okay. We're just going to keep practicing. I could practice forgiveness. I could practice gratitude. I could practice these things on a daily basis. And almost imperceptibly, we become better at them over time.
Oh, absolutely. It's like that magic moment where, you know, I like to say there's that bridge that has to be built between knowing and feeling. So, you know, and really it's the bridge between the conscious and the subconscious. And so when all of a sudden you look back and you're like, well, when did I start not having to be conscious about this? When did I start actually implementing it without that conscious thought and having to be really intentional about this? And you're just like, oh, I guess it happened a couple weeks ago. Oh
yeah.
And it's like, dang, that snuck up on me.
yeah, because, and that's great, because then that means we're in the moment and we're in the day, right? You know, I work a one day at a time program. All that matters is today, right? It's all I have control over. Yesterday's gone, tomorrow hasn't happened yet. Focus on today.
Yeah. And you know, you can set yourself up for tomorrow, but that doesn't mean that you have to in that moment. It means if you're able to, you can. And so
For sure, I can plan. I plan all the time. Yeah. I got stuff on my calendar. I got, so, you know, this idea that I can't think about tomorrow. No.
Right.
But I can't live in it. I can't be so preoccupied with tomorrow and what's going to happen and start going through these manifestations about different scenarios in my head. And what if that happens? And what if this happens? And what if they do this or I do that? Or this doesn't. No. I live in today. I can certainly absolutely plan for tomorrow, right? And just like, you know, I can't live in the past. I can't relive the past. I can, but I don't shut the door on it either, right? Everything that's happened before this moment has gotten me here, right? And so, understanding that I can live in today, and that's just such an, a lot of us are either, you know, really, really preoccupied with the future or fixated on the past. And I'm so grateful to be able to increasingly just live in today.
Do you have things that you do in the day that, let's say you're having a tough day, there's a few things that happened, it's got you kind of in this heavy, in a little bit of heaviness, right? Heavy feelings, heavy energy. Are there things that you do that allow you to break that and come back to yourself right now?
Totally. Number one with a bullet is getting out and walking. I do that every day anyway, but that invariably improves my mood and my well-being. I walk every day with my recovery dog, Louie, and there's something magical about that process within my brain and within my body. And it really does allow me to return to homeostasis no matter what's going on. Also, music for me. Listening to music, or I play guitar, I write music. It's a really great way for me to process really heavy stuff that maybe I'm not able to process in a more straightforward way. And through writing lyrics and chord progressions and putting those together, I'm able to work through some of the more complex stuff and some of the heavier stuff in a way that is meaningful to me. And I can create something beautiful out of something that, you know, is, can be pretty dark and heavy at times.
Absolutely. It's interesting that you say that about music and writing it and playing it and how it can help you to process some of those complex things. Because for me, you know, similarly, it's been when I started journaling, like the first time I journaled, I was like, whatever, I just got to put something on paper and just no plan, no anything. And next thing I know, it's coming out as poems. And another thing is like short stories. It's like, where's this coming from? But through that creativity that I allowed my brain to tap into, like it allowed me to process things in a non-lateral way. And like when you can figure out ways to tap into that creativity so that you can, you know, get some of these things out and allow yourself to really be who you are. Like there's things that you don't even realize you have inside of you that are allowed to come out, like poems. I've never written poems. I had to do them for school and I struggled with it and it was terrible, but I've written like, I don't know, 6-10 poems, something like that. And it's like, where did that come from?
RJ, that is so cool. And I fundamentally believe we're all creative.
Yeah.
Beings. Yep. All of us. And if we allow ourselves to tap into that creativity, we're becoming more complete persons and complete people and complete beings. I don't believe there's a single human being that was ever born, that has ever lived, that doesn't have a creative side to them. Manifests in different ways for different people, for sure, right?
Yes.
But we're all creative, and it's such a beautiful part of ourselves that we can embrace. And it doesn't have to be this sort of commercially successful, viable, like, you know, we don't have to be a Taylor Swift or, you know, a super successful artist in order for us to embrace our creativity and for it to have meaning.
Yeah. And this comes down to like defining words for yourself, right? And I'm a huge believer in that. And so I tell people when I talk about creativity, I'm not talking about painting. I'm not talking about, you know, even music or anything like that. For me, creativity is finding connections between two seemingly unrelated topics, because sometimes it is that having that different perspective. Sometimes it's, you know, the way that you're looking at the world, period, can be creative. And people don't give themselves the credit for where that creativity manifests and how it shows up in their lives.
Oh, it could be in so many. And this, you're right. And, you know, people that write code for, that's creative, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
There's just so many different facets of creativity, and you're right. It doesn't have to be relegated to the arts per se, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I was a high voltage line tech for 10 years. And so I'd get called out to jobs where people wouldn't have power. They'd have things that, you know, their appliances were about to go bad because of something that was going on. And so I'd have to look at my truck and be like, okay, I don't have the correct material to fix this, you know, conventionally. What do I have to make this work? Whether for a few hours so I can get that, or whether it's I can actually do it permanent, but it's not the, like I said, the conventional way of doing it.
I love that.
And so tapping into that creativity, I loved it. Like that's what I loved about the job, was having that creativity. Totally. And totally. It was just, it was so freeing. It was so freeing.
I love that. I do, and I do that around the house, right? When there's something that needs to be fixed, right? I'm using my creativity in order to, you know, whether it's fixing a sink or whatever it is, right? That's absolutely creative. And it feels good.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And the walks too, like going outside and walking, like that is under appreciated, I think, by a lot of people, that just how powerful it can be getting out and just walking. You don't have to run, just walk.
Nope. Look, if I'm running, RJ, then, you know, the police are chasing me. That's really, or a bear. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Those are the instances where I'm running. Otherwise, I walk, and it's profoundly beneficial. And physiologically, it's huge for us, especially in the beginning, if we're recovering from some sort of substance use disorder or behavioral addiction, because those substances and behaviors reduce the amount of dopamine that's available in our brains. That's physiologically what happens. And we become more and more dependent on outside sources for that dopamine because our brain's like, there's too much, I'm going to make less, right? And then we stop whatever the behavior or substance is, and our brain's like, God, I need more dopamine. And it increases the craving for the behavior or substance. So getting into recovery, finding healthy ways to increase our healthy brain chemicals like dopamine in a natural way is huge.
And it's allowing those things to look different than they did before. Like, that's a big one too, that things are going to look different and that's okay. It's actually probably a good thing.
Yeah. The other thing too, I think about when you think about the things that, when I think about things that got me well, community, being in community with like-minded people that are on the same or similar journey than I am has been such a big part of my recovery. And it really felt like coming in this time, I've had a couple of attempts at recovery before this one, and it felt like coming home, you know, and this is my tribe. And being in community with these people that are ultimately pursuing the same kinds of goals I am in recovery has been really, really beneficial in so many different ways. And really, in the beginning, finding people that had what I wanted, right? And starting to do the things that they did, man. Like, if they made their beds in the morning, I started making my bed in the morning, right? Like, you know, so, you know, they thought like I thought, they felt like I felt, they drank like I drank, and they got better. And so I was like, maybe, just maybe I can get better too if I do what they did. And so that's huge, I think, just the community element.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it goes back to that, you know, this philosophy too, that a lot of times people, when they think of being envious or jealous of somebody, that's a negative thing. It's only a negative thing if you don't act on it and you know, start to treat them harshly. But if you see those things and you want them, they're just providing you a pathway or something to strive towards, or, you know, even just being a mentor, maybe not there talking to you, but they're just showing you that way that,
by example,
that you can use. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And embrace that. Embrace that. Absolutely. And the thing with community too, I think this goes back to, you know, at the beginning of the episode, when we're talking about connection, like, you get to find that connection in that community.
Yeah, those meaningful connections really are critical for us. We're meant to be in community. We evolved as a species to be in community with each other. If we weren't in community with each other in our early evolutionary days, we probably died. Got eaten by a wolf, like, you know, we really needed each other. And so our whole physiology is designed to be in community. And when we're connected and we're feeling connected in community and we're feeling connected to ourselves and others, there's really positive physiological things that happen in our bodies and in our minds, right? And when we're disconnected, there's some really negative things that happen to us.
Absolutely. And something that can drive that disconnection that goes back again to your story, and people who've been here for a while, they know my story with that deep disconnection, is when you try to fit in, when you think that you're trying to belong, but you're trying to fit in. So you're changing who you are to be around those people. And you think, this is going to get me connection, this is going to get me community. And you're betraying yourself and you're creating disconnection with yourself, disconnection with the people that are there, because you can't truly connect with somebody if you're not being yourself. And so understanding the difference between fitting in and belonging and figuring out the difference between those two in yourself is massive.
Oh, RJ, no question. And I love that. And when I talk about my reconnection to my higher power, myself and other people, that's order of operations. Okay. I needed to connect to a power greater than myself in order to then connect to myself and then then and only then could I really authentically connect to other people, right? And that feeling of being a fraud, that feeling of, like, if you knew the real me, if you knew who I really was, you wouldn't like me. You wouldn't want to hang out with me. You wouldn't want to have anything to do with me. And that's because I was very uncomfortable with myself and all the things that I had done, thought, felt up until that moment, right? And so until I could reconcile all of those things within myself and reconnect to myself, forgive myself, and start that self-healing, then I could really connect to other people. But it was definitely an order of operations kind of deal.
And that's something that brings up the what came first, the chicken or the egg, right? And just how different people go about things in different ways. So, like, you did spiritual, then yourself, and then others. And mine was actually, I had to connect with myself before I could connect with other people. And then I connected with that spiritual side of me that is, you know, and that's that uniqueness of the journey. And it goes back to, like I said, the philosophy of the chicken or the egg. Like, a lot of times people are like, well, it's gotta be the egg, 'cause you can't hatch. And it's like, the real answer is, who gives a fuck? It doesn't matter. Just do what works for you.
And there's people that I know, RJ, to your point, that got into the rooms of recovery, and only through feeling the love from other people could they really begin the process of loving themselves, right? And so, you know, you've got to do it in the order that makes sense for you, and you know, your journey will be different, and your order of operations may be different, right? And that's the experiment piece. Just run that experiment. Keep doing these spiritual actions. And look, I was doing it all at once, really, right? I was connecting to other people. I was connecting to a higher power. I was connecting to myself, right? And ultimately, the order of operations where things fell in place and what needed to fall in place for me and the order that they needed to fall in place for me. But I was pretty much doing it all at once.
And yeah, I think that's sometimes we can look at it like, I have to do this and then I can do this.
Right.
But who says it has to be that way, right? Like,
100%.
Yeah.
No,
you
man.
Can do
like, just
multiple
do it
things.
All. Just, yep. Just, you know, and like, just like, you know, a lot of people say when they, you know, do a business venture, you know, they just jump in, right? Because if they would have planned too much, you just get paralyzed in the planning.
Yes.
You jump in and make some mistakes, but you're just doing it and figuring it out. And it's through the experience and the action, right? Somebody once said that they were a kinetic learner, and I can relate to that. I'm a kinetic learner.
Same. It's like, you know, just going back to line work, where, you know, the apprenticeship, we talk about how to do things in a book all day. And I understood it to a point, but I really didn't understand it till I got my hands on it. Right.
You got it.
And it's that same thing with this. Like, you could talk about and go over, like, let's say emotions and feelings. You could talk about it and understand it intellectually all you want, but until you're in it and you feel it and you do it, like, there's just some things that you have to experience in order to actually understand it. And that's similar to what you were talking about earlier too, like, it makes sense why you had to experience it in order to understand and be able to, you know, break it down, because that's how you learn.
No
and
question.
So there's something else people can use for themselves if you have that understanding of yourself.
Totally. And then through other people's stories.
Yeah.
I've heard so many people's stories through my podcast and through just the rooms of recovery, and really believe too that we evolve to learn through story in many ways. The written word and whatnot is pretty recent in relative human historical terms, right? For the vast majority of our evolution, we learned through story. It's a powerful way for us to learn. We connect in a very visceral way when we're hearing a story. We feel like we're a part of it, and we connect on such a different level, and it allows us to be able to really identify with that person. And when I identify with you, and when I really believe that you are like me, you are like me, and I can only really believe that when you tell me your story in a vulnerable way, that moment, RJ, is the moment I'm not separate from you anymore. I'm not different from you anymore. We are the same. And then you tell me about how you got better. That's the moment I believe I can get better too.
And that's where that connection happens, in that deep and communal way that I think all of us are searching for. We just don't realize that that's actually what it is. And it's not the outside, the external things that are going to bring us that feeling. And I think that's such a great place to transition to. Charlie, how could people keep up with you? They're interested.
They can go to wayoutcast.com, all one word, and that is the place where you'll find all of our episodes and where you can listen to them on your favorite podcast platform, wherever you get your podcasts. You'll also find our recovery coaching services there. So if you're interested in some recovery coaching, we do that for you too. And there's some sweet recovery merch there as well. We're a very lean and mean operation, RJ, and our only goal for our podcast is to help people get better and recover. That's it. So we don't advertise, we don't take sponsorships, we keep it lean and mean, and we just share stories so that you might also recover.
That's beautiful. That's so beautiful. This has been such a wonderful, wonderful conversation, Charlie. I appreciate you joining me. And for anybody out there, share this episode with someone who you think would benefit from it, so that we can, maybe be that seed that gets planted and start somebody on the recovery journey. Or maybe it's somebody who's been on it and has been struggling, and now they see a different pathway, or they see a different way that they might be able to approach something. And that happens through people sharing different tools, different ways for people to get in touch with, different people. And go over and follow A Way Out podcast, because it's amazing. It's an amazing thing. So thanks for being here, Charlie. I really appreciate it. And everybody, let's try to be better tomorrow than we were today, because at least we don't make it, we tried. Have a great week, everyone. I love you.